Welcome back. I am Dale Lally. He is Matt Williamson, and this is a special edition of The Drive here on Steelers Nation Radio and ESPN 970. The Steelers just wrapping up OTA session number 7.
Another in the books.
We'll see. They're efforting. I think that's the word that people use in radio now.
It's a good one.
Efforting to see if we're going to get a player here. They're going to try to grab somebody coming off the field here. So we'll see,
see how that goes, what
we get here. But we are trying.
If we don't, you're tagging out, right?
I am going to head into the locker room a little bit myself. And
Tom Opperman
is going to jump in here for me. So if you hear that line change, that's what's going on here.
Lots of balls in the air right now.
Go talk to some players myself.
Yeah, instead of goofing off with me.
But 7 of these things in the books. Like, OTAs are almost over.
I think there's a lot to glean from these, to be very honest with you. I mean, not like, boy, this guy looks good, he's going to be a star, or this guy's lost, he has no chance. It's just there's a lot of good work being done. You know, I mean, team activities, individual drills, these guys learning each other as well as, you know, what it's like to be a pro for the young dudes. I mean, I think these are quality sessions.
Yeah, for sure. I think in some cases, you know, for some of the – again, you had a bunch of new veterans coming in. What it's like to be a Steeler.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
You know, it's different here. We say that, but
I've talked to too many other people
who, you know, players who say it's different here.
Yeah.
For that not to be the case.
I mean, it starts with ownership. It's been the same owners that have the same outlook
Same head coaches.
Yeah. I mean, there's less change here than any team in the league, except maybe New England. You know, I mean, it's rare. And practices are run basically the same way, the same expectations, you know. So, yeah, it is different. I mean, I'm sure everyone that goes to Arizona and Chicago and et cetera, say, yeah, this is different than I'm used to. And it is. I mean, none of them are carbon copies of themselves. But I do think the Steelers, as much as any, is an eye-opening experience for a new guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's
been in the league.
As Larry Ogunjobi walks off here, I can remember talking to him about that late last year, just how the different feel here.
Yeah. And he played against his team a lot.
In Cincinnati – where they didn't even have there's no indoor practice facility, things of that nature.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just different.
Yeah, and there's some teams that spend more, there's some that spend less. I don't think it's all about facilities and that type of thing either, but I think there's a culture. I mean, that goes without saying.
Yeah, and I think the head coaching stability has a big part of that as
huge.
Well. I mean, you know exactly what to expect day to day.
I mean, in the last 5 years, how many new guys have you talked to? And it happened last week with Patrick Peterson that one of their first things they mention is I was really interested to play for Coach Tomlin.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a great recruiting tool.
Yeah.
I mean, he has a phenomenal reputation that's well-earned, and players respect him. I mean, they don't even have to be their buddies, but they respect him, you know.
Right. There's just that, you know, I can remember watching him on the sidelines and seeing how into the game he was.
You know he's going to shoot me straight.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to be underhanded in any way. He communicates extremely well with players, media, everybody. I mean, I think that might even be his greatest strength. So.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, some of that – the interesting thing is that, you know, in previous years, again, the Steelers weren't super active on the free agent market.
Right, right.
But they've been able to do that the last 2 years, and so you get to see a little bit more of that recruiting part of this.
I'm interested, too. I mean, let's say Pickett has a good year. I mean, takes a step forward, a clear step forward that no one could deny. I would think this would be a really attractive landing spot next offseason, you know, next free agency period, too. You know, if you maybe you only want 2 or 3 guys, but there's 3 or 4 people interested for each spot.
I'm not going to say
on the rise,
they take a little less money, but you're a more attractive landing spot if the money's close.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt.
If players think you have a chance to win, and when you've got the ownership, the head coach, and the quarterback in place.
Right. It's a pretty good start.
Yeah.
No question about it. And you have money to spend.
Well, and money to spend,
right? I mean, they've had ownership, coach, quarterback for 20 years, but didn't always have the money to spend.
Right. I mean, a lot of those years, you were right up against it.
Yeah.
You know, somebody talking about that on the social media. Well, Omar Khan's just killing this offseason. So much different than what Kevin Colbert, you know, did. I'm like, Kevin Colbert spent 18 of his years, about 15 of those years,
losing the Javon Hargraves.
A very high-priced quarterback. And, oh, by the way, went through a couple of different seasons there where the salary cap actually went down.
About that, too. And, I mean, it wouldn't matter who your GM is, but I guarantee most of Kevin's years here and most of Ben's years here, more importantly, they lost more in free agency than they gained.
Yeah.
I mean, almost every year.
How
could you not?
I mean, it's just, that's just
because you're developing talent well, and people are going to pay for it, and you can't keep everything. And I'm not giving Omar a hard time. I mean, I think he's had a phenomenal offseason, and it's not a single man's job either. I mean, several people are you know, responsible for that. But when you're picking 27, 28 every year because you're deep into the playoffs, like Kevin's teams were, it's hard to grab the Broderick Joneses. There's a reason they didn't draft a tackle in the first round, since Jermaine Stephens.
Right, yeah. I mean,
picking late.
When your average draft pick is 24th, you're getting, you know, at best the number five offensive tackle prospect.
Right. I mean, it's hard to trade up the
same thing
10,
at the cornerback
12,
position. 14. When people talk about the cornerback position, when
you can get the number one guard, but you get the number five tackle.
Right.
Yeah, right.
It's a difference in what you can get there.
Sure. I mean, or Pouncey or a guy like that.
Yeah.
The top center.
So you take what you can get.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and you live with what you have at tackle, and you try to help them the best you can.
You know, you get fortunate that you get a Cam Hayward or a T.J. Mm-hmm. Watt.
Yeah.
I mean, they were the, you know.
Late first round guys
who, you know,
putting
were.
Together Hall of Fame career, you know, Hall of Fame resumes.
That speaks volumes to me. I mean.
Mm-hmm. And everybody's going to have their misses. I mean, it's just drafts an imperfect science. But
when you hit like that.
I mean, that's a big hit.
Yeah.
I mean, you're happy to hit a double, but when you can hit a leadoff homer, like, wow. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
picking where you're picking at, that's very difficult to do.
It is. Not looking promising for a guest, but who knows?
It is not. We'll see what happens
here. There's still a lot of people on the field, though.
Yeah, there are. Well, again, it is alumni day today, so there's a lot of former players out here,
mm-hmm.
guys with
That's cool
Super
that they
Bowl
do that, too.
I'm
talking about culture and tradition and things like that. It's cool that they do that. And, you know, camp is even more of a reflection of that. They always bring it.
Always, yeah.
At least one around, you know, every day.
I don't know about you, Matt, but I was looking forward to camp last year because we were going back to St. Vincent College. I think I'm looking forward to it more this year.
I think I'm looking forward more to the football this year.
Yeah.
I mean, our off-the-field endeavors are going to be just as good any year, I have a feeling.
Yeah.
But I think the camp battles, you know, last year was all about the quarterback, which is fine. But, I mean, I'd rather know who the quarterback is than talk about who the quarterback's going to be. It got a little redundant.
Just
a
different feel.
Yeah. And there'll be – I'm interested who this year's Jaylen Warren is, too. Like, who's the guy we're not talking about that we're not projecting to make the roster that a weekend goes, wow, I like that guy. Or,
you know,
I mean, there's going to be two or three of them, too. And this roster is going to be harder to make, I think, than Jaylen Warren's was. You know,
there is no doubt about that. I mean, I look at this this roster.
And they're going to cut good players.
It is as deep as I can recall in quite some time.
It really is. I mean, I think that's inarguable. I mean,
yeah.
There's little doubt about that.
One of the players we were trying to get here is Braden Fajoko, the new nose tackle, and he is still over there running. So I don't know.
Maybe we got a chance.
We got a shot at getting him here. We'll see. Looking to see if Michael Birch, the PR, he's still over there. So
you
can
duck out either way if you want.
There's a chance. So we'll see. He's over there. A lot of guys out here doing conditioning.
I'd say more than I think any of the OTA practices so far of when the final buzzer rings and they huddle up. More guys have stuck around, I think, than any other day that I can remember.
Yeah. Quarterbacks out there still throwing with receivers and running backs. And
30 players out
there. As usual, the offensive line is still over there working.
That's been a unit that puts in the extra work time and time again. You know, just technique stuff, you know, work on your pass sets, you know, little things like that, hand placement. I've certainly seen Salamalu coaching guys up on the side, too. You know, I mean, obviously the line coaches are out there, too, but – you know, I think people do ask his opinions.
Yeah. No, that's a group that, you know.
Including the first-round pick, by the way. He's been putting the time in after practice.
They certainly put the time in. And not that the other guys who have gone off the field aren't putting time in.
That doesn't mean that they're lazy.
But that unit as a whole just stays out there as a group and just grinds.
More than the other, I think so. And there's some competition there, too. I mean, there's players that easily would have made this team last year aren't as safe.
Yeah, no, you know no doubt
I mean?
About that.
Yeah.
No doubt about
especially
that.
Especially that position. I mean, the depth was really questionable last year. Now the depth is enviable.
Yeah.
I'm not sure there's many lines in the league that have as many NFL players at their OTAs on the offensive line right now.
If you remember a few years ago, the Bills did that.
Oh, yeah.
Where they went out and
they
signed.
They got like six or seven.
They went out and signed a bunch of guys, and then at the end of their camp, traded a couple of those, including the guy who ended up in
Wyatt Teller ended up
Cleveland.
Keeping the wrong guys.
Yeah.
And that kind of worked. I mean, their line needed a lot of work. None of those guys were high-priced free agents. Mitch Morse was their biggest guy. We talked about him in the first segment as a center. They threw a bunch of stuff at the wall of NFL players but not stars to at least have something to build on. And I guess it worked, but the logical progression for them would have been, and then you draft over those dudes.
Right.
They really kind of
haven't. They didn't do that.
Yeah. The line's been kind of stagnant, and I know they're unhappy with it up there right now, you know, how the line played last year.
But that is a way that they – I mean, they threw a bunch of guys at the wall and, you know, just looked at what stuck. Now, again, they did make a mistake with Teller.
Right. But he was young. And
we don't know that he would have developed that way in Buffalo, the way, you know, different offense, different styles.
And I think he was like a fifth-round pick that they just didn't have room for, you know.
So, I mean, that kind of stuff happens. But
that was an interesting strategy. I mean, it was like, we got a young quarterback. Our line's pretty rough. Let's just buy a bunch of free agents and see who, you know, see how it shakes out.
Yeah.
And it worked fine. It was
I see some similarities there with what the Steelers have done here.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the guys that they signed weren't – I mean, LaRaven Clark was signed as a depth piece.
Right.
You know, he wasn't signed to start. Herbig was signed as a depth piece. He wasn't signed
to start.
They
signed a lot of Herbigs.
Yeah.
The Bills did that.
The Bills signed a bunch of them. Like
They did. And, again, it was mixed results, but I'd never seen that strategy before at that position.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. We'll see if it works.
Good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm excited about this O-line.
Yeah. Still waiting to see here. We're going to take a break.
We might as well, because if he's going to sit down with him, we'll cut him short.
Let's do that. He is Matt Williamson. I am Dale Lally. You're listening to a special edition of The Drive here on Steelers Nation Radio and ESPN 970. We are live from the Steelers OTA sessions here on the south side, and they just wrapped up practice session number 7. We are here again Wednesday and Thursday of this week.
Yeah, it'll be the next 2 days,
And then it'll be time for minicamp.
Yeah,
we'll
following
get on,
week after that.
On to that and 3 days of that, and then it's off to St. Vincent College in a month or so. So
going quick. What's happening?
Very fast. It's happening fast. It's all happening right here on ESPN 970 and Steelers Nation Radio. We'll be back with more right after this.
Welcome back to a special edition of The Drive, live from Steelers OTAs on the south side. Got a little bit more special, too.
Oh, we just stepped it up a notch.
Jumping in.
Yeah.
Tom Opferman
Reliever.
In for Dale Lally. Dale scrammed back into the locker room to, you know, do the important stuff.
Yeah,
actually,
do his job,
actually
man.
Talk to the people that matter. Exactly. Do what he actually gets paid for.
Instead of goofing off with me.
So I'll sit out here and goof off with you for the next half hour. And, Matt, OTA Day 7 wrapping up, like you and Dale were just talking about. The offseason schedule's moving along pretty quickly. I want to skip ahead towards the season a little bit.
Yeah, let's go.
I'm sure you've picked up on this, but the AFC is pretty loaded this year.
Oh, man. I mean, that's my biggest concern with the season is just who you're fighting with for playoff spots and AFC Championship and stuff like that to get to. I mean,
okay, well, let me give you a little silver lining then, a little glass half full. Although it's brutal, the Steelers' schedule really broke favorably for them, and a lot of those other AFC teams are going to have to be in those dogfights like you were kind of alluding to where they're just going to beat the hell out of each other. A team like the Steelers that, you know, finished third last year in their division plays, I don't want to say an easy schedule, but compared to last year, it is easy.
As it looks today on, you know, the beginning of June, it's an easy schedule.
Like, outside of their division, who's the best quarterback? Lawrence, right?
Yeah.
That's it.
Right.
He's, I'm not necessarily ready to anoint him as a finished product yet either.
No, but I mean, I think he's a top 10 guy.
I do,
trending
too.
In the right direction. But if
that,
you only have one of those outside of the division.
That's your biggest problem outside of the division. Yeah, you've got something going for you. So what I think about with there is that the Steelers are better as a team than their schedule would dictate they are. Like, they're playing teams that they're much better than, I think, because they've improved so much from last year, and they're such a young and upcoming team.
Yeah.
They can really take advantage. I'm not saying they're going to win the division, beat out the Bengals, but they could sneak a 6 or a 7 seed out of this with other teams beating themselves up and them taking advantage of kind of the weaker slate that they have.
So this time the last couple of years, just you know, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, Lawrence may not even play in that game. I mean, we know that the season's going to change. I mean, predicting what's going to happen, and we don't have crystal balls. But sitting here in June of 2022, 21, 20, they were projected to have, like, the hardest schedule in the league. And now it's one of the easier, as is, again, things are going to change. But what's remarkable is kind of what you were getting at is – you know, 6 of those games every year are the same, and they're hard. I mean, that's a difficult division. Any way you cut it, there's no weak links, and there may be a Super Bowl champ in there. Who knows? And any of those four, I think, could compete for, you know, the best of titles.
Right.
But you also are going to play an AFC division every year, too. And considering the division and conference you're in, their schedule of opponents isn't bad.
Nope.
I mean, like, the AFC East, I mean, you didn't single out the East, but you talked about teams beating each other up. The AFC East not only has – every one of those has six difficult division games, but they play the NFC East – which Washington and Giants aren't powerhouses, but they're probably dogs against the Browns or against the Cowboys and Eagles, or at least close to it. And they
if you go to New York, I mean, I'm not thrilled with playing the Giants.
And I don't think Washington's a throwaway.
No, I don't either.
I mean, there's some teams on the Steelers' schedule that could be fighting for the first overall pick.
And I don't think Washington's one of them.
I don't think Washington, the Giants, is one of them. And then the other division the AFC East plays is the AFC West. So the Raiders don't look strong, but they all get the Chiefs. They all get the Chargers. I mean, there's no throwaway games there either. And you mentioned the Jags. I think what's interesting, too, is the four first-place teams in the AFC, maybe the Jags aside, but the Chiefs play the Bills, who play the Bengals.
Yeah,
there's
right.
a round-robin tournament against there. I mean, what if they all go 1-1 against each other, Bills, Bengals, Chiefs? You know, so there's a lot of losses for the other AFC teams that are, you know, pretty foreseeable.
You get Burrow and Lamar, if health permits, twice, like we said, mm-hmm. but you're missing Allen, you're missing Mahomes,
right.
you're missing on Herbert, you're missing on Rodgers.
Right.
I mean, if Tua's healthy, you're missing on Tua.
I mean,
you're really starting to work your way down the list when it comes to the AFC and quarterbacks that you're going to have to face this year.
And some of the ones you do face are, I mean, rookies, unproven, you know, Love, guys like that, too, that you just don't know what you're going to get. And maybe one of those is better than expected, but most will probably be worse than expected because they just don't have much experience.
And you don't expect Purdy to be ready week one, most likely.
And if he is, I don't care, to be honest, but that is that's the other thing I wanted to mention. When you mentioned the schedule, is we knew a month ago or whatever what teams they were going to play and where. We didn't know when.
Yeah.
But Dale and I were talking about this. Like, boy, I want to play the Niners as soon as possible. Get them in week one's best.
Best case scenario.
I mean, if Purdy does play, will he have any preseason snaps at that point?
And
probably
you know
not.
What? I mean, not to get on a tangent here, but I'm sure you're right with me on getting a little bit of sick of that Purdy talk and how he seems to just be a little bit
incredibly overrated.
He's anointed already as the Niners' starting quarterback, mm-hmm. and I know Trey Lance has not done anything to warrant him being even in the conversation, but I would still put him in that conversation if I was the 49ers.
Like, right.
There's not, and it's not, you know, because I think Trey Lance can still be something. I just don't think Brock Purdy has, you know, blown your doors off right now. It's bizarre to me to see some people nationally, you know, put him up in like top 15 sometimes when it comes to the quarterbacks. And for the Niners to kind of, at least on the surface, seem pretty comfortable with him moving forward, I think that could be a pretty big mistake. I mean, that team has had such a Super Bowl ready roster for 4 or 5 years now. And that most important position has just eluded them. If they hitch their wagon to this guy, it might be their biggest mistake.
I know. I think it's interesting. And I don't love how Shanahan's handled quarterbacks since he's been there. I think he's a phenomenal offensive mind, but the quarterback things are weird. I do believe that there was truth to the rumors that he wanted Mac Jones and they talked him into Trey Lance. Because I do think what he wants is he wants a joystick. You know, he wants to be the game, and he just wants someone that'll run it exactly the way he sees the game. And Purdy does that well. You know, that he runs the offense as drawn up exactly. He's a quick processor. And I'm with you. I think he's maybe the most overrated quarterback in the league already. But you can't argue with the results and what he did when he was inserted in there. And it's a weird quarterback dilemma. But I think he has such limited upside, and he had a bad arm to start, and now he's coming off an arm surgery, you know what I mean? So, I don't know. I mean, it's two different worlds, but I've been asked this 1,000 times since the end of the season. What if you swapped Purdy and Pickett? Who's better? I'm like, I don't think it's close. I mean, Pickett in that system as a rookie would have been better than Purdy. I mean, and no doubt in my mind. And Purdy here would have struggled more than Pickett. I mean, I just believe that to be true.
No, I tend to agree with you on that as well. And
what they were asked to do as rookies.
If Shanahan could choose, he would pick Pickett. You know, I have a feeling he would.
Yeah, I think every GM in the league would.
There's a reason why he was Mr. Irrelevant. There's just nothing there that really pops. Now, maybe he can, you know, overcome all of the odds and be the hardest worker that you've ever seen. And despite not having all the physical gifts, work himself into a great NFL quarterback. I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think so.
I don't see him as that kind of player. So with the Niners, You know, not only is the quarterback thing going for you in week one, mm-hmm. 1 o'clock game for a West Coast team.
Yeah, it's that's
9
a good point,
a.m.
too.
For them.
It is 9 a.m.
And
cross country.
Start their season off against the Steelers. So.
And I'm sure the Steelers Stadium will be hopping.
No question about it. First home game in, like, what, 8 years that they've had at Heinz Field or at Acrisure Stadium, excuse me. So,
yeah. But I do think playing them early is an advantage.
So, AFC, daunting for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the Steelers can kind of, you know, lurk in the shadows a little bit. And then you might look up at the end of the year and say, oh, wow, they're 10-7 and they're the sixth seed.
Yeah. I mean, as opposed to other AFC contenders, I think there's less white water to navigate for the Steelers, just as the schedule stands now, than the Bills are going to deal with the Jets. I mean, like, look at the Jets and Miami schedule. It's brutal.
It's brutal.
Right. Patriots schedule's awful.
Like you said, though, you don't really know what's going to happen.
Of course.
Lawrence could get hurt. Murray could turn it around. Is there a guy outside of the division that maybe like a, I don't know, Green Bay, Jordan Love, ends up being somebody that would make that game
maybe
a little bit more? And I'm asking you to put on your Nostradamus hat here and kind of predict something. Do you see anybody that could maybe take that step and all of a sudden, you know, when we get to October, we're like, oh, that's actually a tougher game than we thought in May.
The Colts.
Yeah.
I mean,
you Rick Richardson guy, you think?
I just think he's going to be hard to play against as a rookie.
Okay.
You know, I mean, especially when you have a, you know, week to prepare for him, they're going to play differently. I'm not predicting that he's going to be a superstar. I just think that, you know, Justin Fields is hard to play against right now. You know, I mean, in that fashion.
I see what you mean. And that's not a terrible roster.
And it's not a terrible roster either. I mean, dealing with Jonathan Taylor and Richardson could be a tougher game than it looks.
A ton of injuries last year for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Defensively.
I mean, I think they could win 8 games this year and be hard to play against. And Richardson might be in offensive rookie of the year conversations. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see that for Stroud or Bryce Young. I mean, I think those guys are going to take their lumps and not have instant success, whether it's normal quarterback stuff or not.
The other one, and this is so down the road, New Year's Eve game against the Seahawks in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And this is more just, you know, curiosity from a fan's perspective of the National Football League, but is Geno Smith going to be able to duplicate what he did last year? Because if he does,
I talk about that a lot.
You could make the argument that he's there with Trevor Lawrence as far as best quarterback outside of the division that they have to play this year.
And they have weapons.
But I trust Trevor Lawrence to continue on his path more than I trust Geno Smith to continue on his right now.
I 100% agree. And, hey, he's an easy guy to root for. I like those guys.
I love
I mean, reinvented his career, you know, came out of nowhere after being a kind of a high pedigree guy and reestablished himself. But Dale and I bring that up a lot. I mean, his second half of the season wasn't nearly as good as the first half of the season. And he's an aggressive passer. He's not just a game manager type. I mean, but they're going to be a run first, dude.
His best attribute is the deep ball.
He's got
a beautiful deep accuracy.
And they love him, and he's a great locker room guy. And, you know, they didn't do anything else to quarterback position when they could have. You know, they could have drafted somebody or grabbed a Levis or somebody like that.
I thought they might kick the tires on a Hendon Hooker.
I thought that'd be a great landing spot for
just a year off behind Geno Smith.
That'd be
pretty much doing the same thing, but
him.
In Detroit behind Jared Goff.
Exactly. And they both had extra first-round picks, those two teams. But overall, I mean, he could be a very average player. And I kind of am predicting that with Geno. I don't think he's going to be a top 10 quarterback this year.
Yeah, I tend to agree that might be coming back to turning back to a pumpkin again this year for Geno Smith.
Yeah, or just fine. You know what I mean?
Do you think that then Seattle might regret not moving
a little bit
and Hooker?
Because I think they'll, I mean, in the NFC, I bet they go to the playoffs. They can have another opportunity to go grab a Hooker or a Levis or a guy like that.
Right.
Or,
they're going to be stuck in that kind of purgatory where they're going to go 9-8. 10-7,
missed their chance to
get in to the playoffs, 8-9, just missed the playoffs, be picking like 15th, 16th in the draft. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe they did miss their big opportunity there to get their guy moving forward. But I feel like, you know, that happens to a lot of franchises where quarterbacks just kind of get you stuck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they play just good enough where do I take that risk and go with the young, unproven rookie, or do I try to sign this guy who's a little bit better than mediocre and hope he gets a little bit better than that even?
I mean, the Steelers are going to have to deal with this.
Every team deals with it.
4 years
and
from
Dalton
now.
Come to mind.
Right.
You know?
I mean,
Geno with the Seahawks just now. It's just they. Kirk Cousins is like the poster child for that. It's like, is he good enough? I think so. I don't want to risk moving on, though.
Right. I mean, the Giants didn't pick up Daniel Jones' fifth-year option a year ago. Then they had to sign him.
They had to sign him.
I mean,
I think you agree he's not worth that money.
I don't.
I mean, he had to get it, but it's not worth it.
I mean, I don't know what else they would have done there. They kind of hamstrung themselves
a little bit,
too. I think he's better than people think, but he's not he's not a star. I mean, and that's why I brought up Pickett, is you hope by that time – boy, he's a no-brainer Joe Burrow, Herbert, extend guy, you know. But there's a better chance than not, and I'm not even picking on Pickett. It's just the same true as all the first rounders, Bryce Young, you know, Stroud. Chances are when contract time comes around, it's going to be like, yeah, we like him. Is he the next Ben?
Yes.
Is he an elite guy? Because there's only five of them on the planet, you know?
Well,
then what's that worth?
The host of the show that I usually produce, Mark Madden, I'm sure mm-hmm. you've heard of him. People listening have probably heard
sure.
of him once or twice. He might have even brought this up to you when you were on the show during one of your hits, Matt. But one of the more radical things that I think he – or takes that he has is his quarterback's take, where he would draft a quarterback every 4 or 5 years early.
I don't disagree.
And then – if you hit on one of the five,
you just have to
the Allens, the
right,
Burrows,
right.
then you sign him for the big time. He's mm-hmm. here for the next 20 years kind of contract. If they're not that, if they get to just say a Kirk Cousins, a Derek Carr, as tough as it might be, you rip the Band-Aid off, you let him walk, you draft another quarterback with your first pick.
Yep. No, I think there's a lot of logic to that. I mean, frankly, if the Steelers use a second-round pick on a quarterback next year, even if Kenny has a good year, I can defend it. I mean, it's the Jalen Hurts-Wentz conversation. When they drafted Hurts, Wentz looked like the answer. He looked like a Burrow.
He
looked
like an MVP that year.
Right.
Yeah.
He was, you know, on the pace to being one of the best. I mean, there's a theory out there. The Packers did this with Favre and Rodgers years. Even the Patriots in the Brady years, draft one every year. Not like Mark's talking about in the top two, three rounds, in the third and the first round. But you might end up with the next Dak Prescott. You know, like – churning that position is a good idea.
If you're comfortable where you're at in the fifth round, mm-hmm. you feel like you filled a lot of pressing needs, and you can do the luxury pick,
mm-hmm.
maybe take the luxury pick on the best quarterback available.
Yeah, someone that has a lot of upside but has a lot of work to do. I mean, I would never condemn a team for doing that.
No, see, I tend to agree with him and you as well, where it would definitely be bold. People would not like it, for
no,
sure.
Right.
You'd be bucking trends like crazy, but I think that you could definitely –
it also makes financial sense.
Right. You can get around those checkmate scenarios that the Cousins and the Cars get you in, mm-hmm. where they're just good enough that it gives you cold feet trying to move on because, you know, the devil you know is better than the devil you mm-hmm. don't know.
And if you have two good ones, maybe you trade one for a future pick or whatever, too. You know, like during the Favre era, they drafted Mark Brunell, Hasselbeck. I mean, a lot of dudes that went on to have really good careers,
right.
you know.
Look at the Washington football team. I mean, they draft RG3 with their big pick. They take Kirk Cousins in, like, the third round, that same exact draft.
Same draft.
Class.
Right,
he ends
right.
up becoming the guy. So mm-hmm. it's the most important position on the field.
The only wrench in it is it's hard. It's easy for us to sit here and say it, but when you get to a situation like this or training camp, how do I get everyone the reps? You know, like, Kenny needs to – you got to get him – you know, that was a problem last year. I think Tomlin did a great job, but how do you balance getting Trubisky ready for week 1 while your first-round pick gets as many reps as possible – and, oh, by the way, Mason Rudolph's pretty decent. You know,
yeah, right.
you know, like, so it's a wonderful theory, and I'm in that camp more often than not, unless you have a Mahomes or somebody like that. But it's not always easy to balance it all within the quarterback room, and if you're only going to keep three as well.
He's Matt Williamson. I'm Tom Opperman. Jumped in for Dale Lawley here on a special edition of The Drive from OTAs. We'll be back. We'll wrap things up. I think Dale is back in the saddle again after a quick soiree in the locker room. So we'll wrap things up, have our final segment of the day coming up next. You're listening to Steelers Nation Radio and ESPN Pittsburgh.
Welcome back to The Drive. I am Dale Lawley. He is Matt Williamson. And, well, we are live here at the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex here in the South Side. The Steelers just wrapped up OTA session number 7. I jumped into the locker room there real quick to have a chat with somebody.
Thanks for Tom for filling in.
Yeah, thank you to Tom Offerman for that. And I ended up chatting with Anthony McFarland, Matt.
Interesting stage of his career.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Going into year 3.
Yeah.
Hasn't been active a whole bunch. And I asked him, I mean, I said, you know, or actually entering year 4 now.
Yeah, I'd say it's put up or shut up time.
It is really put up or shut up time. So if you look at what he's done over the course of his career, he's appeared in 14 games.
Mm-hmm.
42 carries for 146 yards. That's a 3.5 yard per carry average. 12 targets, 9 catches for 76 yards. That's an 8.4 yards per catch average. But what I asked him about was that one game that he appeared in last year, because he was on the practice squad for most of last year. But he came, I think it was Benny Snell. No, Jalen Warren was hurt that game.
Mm.
if I remember correctly.
I think you're right, yeah.
And he was brought up, and when they brought him up, they didn't just bring him up and use him as a, you know, you just go stand on the sideline. These other guys are going to handle.
No, he played.
He had 9 touches that game.
Yeah, yeah.
I think 9 touches. I'm sorry, 8 touches, and produced. They had 6 carries for 30 yards and 2 catches for another 11 yards. And I asked him about that, and he said it really gave him. He said, "I don't want to say that my confidence was wavering at all, but it was a big boost for my confidence." That
being inactive's got to be tough.
Being inactive is very difficult when you're, you know, a guy that's used to playing a lot, but going out there and producing well in a situation like that. And I mean, it's like being a spot starter in Major League Baseball. Like,
yeah, you better take advantage.
They're calling you up. Hey, you're going to start this game, and then we're going to send you back.
We know that's.
But we need a good start. We need 5 good innings out of you.
Yeah, and guys like you and I are sitting here talking about that it was a quality performance, not like, I forgot all about it, he didn't do anything, they didn't give him the ball. So a couple things with him is it really hurts his case that, first of all, kickoff returners hardly matter in the league anymore, and he's good at that. But that's not enough to keep you active on game day from a special teams perspective from where he sits. You know, Benny Snell is a quality special teamer, you know, that is out there for getting his jersey dirty time and time again. And I do think it speaks to – I think the Steelers are really happy with their top 2 backs. And the more homework I've done on Warren and studying them postseason, I think he's an unbelievable find. You know, so they're really set with the top 2. So your 3rd guy almost has to contribute on special teams and be a quality one. So I think that hurts McFarland's cause. And I also think early in his career, which is often the case with highly talented backs, and he's one of them. I mean, he was I think he was right there with J.K. Dobbins as the most highly recruited running back in the country when he came out of high school, is you can kind of get away with some bad habits. I mean, Saquon Barkley has really bad habits, just trying to break the big one and be the best athlete on the field. And I can dance a little bit and make this linebacker miss. Well, you can't do that here, you know. And I think he's certainly in camp and preseason last year started to show that he was really starting to get it from an NFL perspective of – this is what I can do. If it's a 4-yard run, if I get 5 out of it, good. You know.
Yeah, I think he has a much better understanding.
Yeah.
He's not even 24 years old yet.
I know. And like, it's, running backs get washed away quick, though, if you don't get that opportunity. I mean, so I worry about him. You know, is that an asset that the Steelers could use that's hard to employ? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or maybe he's that guy in camp where it's like, we got to get him on the field.
He has
that ability.
To your point about the special team stuff, I asked him if he's been lobbying Danny Smith to get out there and do more special team stuff. He goes, absolutely. So I understand that, you know, he knows that, you know, he's replacing Benny Snell, basically.
Yeah.
If he's going to make this roster. He said, if I want to be here, you know, I got to understand my role, and I got to be out there on special teams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if you're not the number one guy, you better at least be number 2.
Talking about a special team?
It's certain, you know, different
things.
Are they going to use him as a gunner? Well, maybe not. But
he's kind of an odd fit on special teams, too. I mean, he's not a corner, like, gunner type guy. You know, he's not as big and thick as Snell, you know, for some things. Yeah. As a blocker and stuff like that. In a way, for him to really be to showcase his talents, he might need an injury of one of the 2 guys ahead of him. And, I mean, I don't think I'm not rooting for that, of course, but backs get hurt all the time.
Yeah,
I mean, that's not a position that durability is a staple for.
No, absolutely not. But, you know,
I don't know about you, but I would be more comfortable even last year if you didn't have Harris or Warren giving the ball to McFarland than Snell.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
He's more scary.
Yeah.
And he's a better – that's the problem, you know, when you're a great – you know, when you have that kind of speed and you were an outstanding ball carrier, as he was at Maryland – you're never asked to play special teams.
No, of course not.
They're not putting him out there on that stuff. Like,
no.
He's their premier ball carrier. Now, in Benny Snell's case, it was the same thing.
And I give him all the credit in the world.
But he was a different style of running back.
He's a more physical guy than McFarland, too.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm blocking on punt team or kickoff return team, I want Snell doing it more than McFarland. But I don't think McFarland's a Dree Archer either. I mean, he's not that.
No. He's way bigger than Dree.
I mean, I think he could handle 10 carries a game for 17 games.
Yeah.
You know,
there are certain, I mean, there are certain teams out there that would use him like crazy.
I would think, you know, but they're also not a shortage of those, of players at his position
right,
either.
Who are that size. I mean, we saw
he's in a bit of a
20 of them in this year's draft.
Yeah, that are similar. You know, yeah. I mean, and
the difference is, I mean, when you start looking at Anthony McFarland's, you know, his the thing that he had, the thing that he brings is speed.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking up his combine.
But this offense does need more explosives. They need more big playability. But you got to sit Warren or Najee to get him out there too.
That's a problem.
What situation is that going to work? You know, what situation is that advantageous? I mean, he's in a tough spot. He's going to have to do something exceptional.
Yeah.
He can't just be the same at this point.
He was a 4.44 guy at the combine mm-hmm. when he came out.
But what did he weigh? If you're still looking at it, I think he's noticeably.
They listed him at the combine at 208 pounds.
I would guess 205.
Yeah.
So okay.
So He said he's actually leaned down a little bit, but he's gotten – it's more – he's replaced – he's kind of changed his body a little bit
mm-hmm.
in terms of, you know, the muscle mass.
I'm sure.
And he said he's, you know, he's just trying to continue to change that because, you know, what's happened the first 3 years, it hasn't worked.
So it's funny. About an hour or so ago, you mentioned how you're looking forward to camp, and we always have a good time at camp. I'm always looking forward to camp anyway. But I do think there's a handful of Steelers that are a little bit out of sight, out of mind. And if one of them can be the topic of conversation at the bars that night or over the month that we're there, guys like Kendrick Green, maybe Loudermilk's even in that mode now. McFarland for sure.
Norwood.
Norwood's the other one was on the tip of my tongue. I mean, there's about four or five of them that we've seen stuff from. I don't think – for the most part, you'd say those guys are terrible players. I know Green stint as a starter.
None of them are guaranteed a spot on this team.
Not even a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's harder to make this team than last year's team by the looks of things. But if one of those four, you know, I'm sure there's three or four other names that are similar, go really grab our attention, nice, you know.
Yeah, right.
Because those guys are teetering right now.
Yeah, and I hate to say it, but, you know, you still go back to that 2018 game for a guy like Anthony McFarland when he had runs of 75, 81, and 52 yards against Ohio State.
Against Ohio State, yeah. No, it's in him. I mean, he's capable. I think it's in Kendrick Green as well. I mean,
and
there's a lot of ability there.
The one thing that we did see, and I can remember we talked about this last year at training camp from Anthony McFarland, and then we saw it in the preseason – not dancing like the first 2 years, he was a little looking for that home run all the time.
Yep.
To your point,
no, he's hitting it.
I think he understands now. Hey, get the ball and go.
And I'm sure you remember this too, but I remember we broadcast from any new listeners. We broadcast from training camp much differently than we broadcast from here. We talk about everything that's happening, and we even do some play-by-play things that is over our head, but fun, you know. And there was a lot of McFarland instances of him running wheel routes down the sideline, catching 30-yard passes against linebackers, things like that. Getting downfield as a receiver, not just screens and dump-offs. So that's some untapped potential there, too.
If you can do that two or three times a game, if they can utilize him and Calvin Austin in similar type roles.
Yeah.
Where, okay, you know, if I'm, you know.
They're both good jet motion guys.
Yeah, you're going to jet motion that, you know, the fifth time in a row when you've run jet motion at full speed across the formation, you might need a blow.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I talked about it at no end, but their five skill guys on offense, those puzzles are really fun to build. And I never build one with McFarland, but he's a lot different than Najee and Warren. You know what I mean? I mean, you could put a lot of speed on the field.
Well, there was times last year I can remember, you know, early in camp where they were putting – McFarland out there mm-hmm. in the slot with Najee Harris in the backfield.
Yeah.
And then they discovered Jalen Warren.
That's the thing. Nobody this time last year, no one's talking about Jalen Warren.
No, absolutely not.
Right.
So
was a find.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that running back room plays out. I mean,
there's going to be running back injuries. There just are, you know,
over
the course of the year.
That's the one thing, though, I think it gets overlooked with Najee Harris.
Dependability.
The availability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the one thing that – you could talk about how you can go get running backs in any round and all that stuff and point to the 49ers or point to this team or that team, the Dolphins. There's a reason why they have like six of them.
Oh, yeah.
Because they can't keep them healthy.
They try to get three or four games out of them and then bring the next guy in.
Yeah.
And that's hard to build around. And, I mean, I think it's pretty clear, and I don't think we're out of line saying it, Najee did not start last season close to being healthy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he had a steel plate.
Well,
in his
shoe, the line changed, you know, as well. I mean, I think they got better as the season went on.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything kind of progressed.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of camp, Najee was not working much.
Right.
I mean,
right.
He was gutting through it. And just look how many touches he's had in his 2 years. I mean, there's something to be said for that, just the workhorse mentality, too.
Yeah, and the ability to, I mean, again, I don't want to compare him to Le'Veon Bell, but again, he's a good third down back. If they, you know, I think they could use him more
in
this
situation. I do, too. But Warren's a really good receiver, too.
Harris is really good in pass protection. He, you know, he does a lot of those things. He's a good short yardage back. I mean, there's a lot of things there that you look at and you go, yeah, but he's our best guy at that. He's our best guy, you know. So
100% agree.
You know,
and that's a position we've seen the most of, just because running back drills are right here. Yeah. So that's a position I've seen the most reps of in practice. I love Warren. I'm really, really impressed with him. But when Najee hits the sled or goes through the gauntlet, it's different than everybody else.
Yeah.
And my sister could walk out and be like, I'll take him. Yeah, you know, like, he looks the part, and he is a really put-together guy. And he looks a little leaner. He looks a little quicker to me. But he's, I mean, he still hits that sled and the blocking drills and things like that harder than anybody else. He plays with more force.
Yeah, oh, there's definitely force there. And the Steelers obviously value that kind of back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, going back to Bettis and Franco, and I mean, there's a history there, too. And this isn't Najee's fault, but how many – he's been in the league 2 years. How many fourth-quarter leads of seven or more has he been a part of? I bet it's pretty few.
Not many, yeah.
Yeah, and that's where he's really going to be. He hasn't been a chance to be the closer, which is really his best role.
Yeah, he gets to do it a little bit at times last year when they were up in some games.
And, yeah.
You know, but it wasn't like, oh, you're up 14, just go run the football here.
Yeah.
There aren't many of those situations. It's you're up a score, or you're up 6 points or 3 points.
And it's not 3 years ago when Bama's at LSU at a night game and you're up 7 points and you're just dealing with him time and time again. That's not much fun.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine it would be. but just an interesting running back room this year, that all three guys, like, you could look at Najee Harris and Benny Snell and say, similar style of runners. In terms of the power runners, they're not going to break off long runs, you know, consistently. They're going to punish you at the end of it.
Yeah, agreed.
Whereas now you look at it and it's, you got Harris, and then the other two guys are really different than him.
They are. I think Warren's more explosive, more long speed than I originally gave him credit for. And even as a receiver, as a downfield guy, and McFarland clearly is. I mean, he's going to win a race between those three, without a doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, he's fast, and he's explosive too. Do you think there's any chance, injuries aside, they go get another?
I mean, they're still looking. I mean, there.
Three's a little light.
Yeah.
I mean, and if they – and two's really light.
Yeah, the other guy – I mean, they do keep churning and bringing in running backs, you know, undrafted guys or what have you.
Snell's unemployed.
You're always looking for those kind of guys.
And I wonder if that position, too, like, three preseason games, does Najee get any carries? I mean,
no.
Less than five. I mean, maybe none. I don't know. You need to give any to Warren. I mean, he will get some, but I don't.
Some, but I don't think you wouldn't want to give him a lot. So I mean,
I don't want any wear and tear on those two.
I think this is a big.
I think it's McFarland and
somebody else.
Who's gonna get those other carries? I don't know who that guy is.
And those guys are typically then the ones that all the fans like. You know, when Warren was lighting it up last year in the preseason.
Sure.
Like, we were talking about him. I don't know, 3-4 days into training camp.
Oh, he stood out from the start.
Yeah.
I mean, he was
– Once they put the pads on, it was like, oh, that guy's
– He's better than the other
he looks good.
Undrafted rookies we're looking at here. Yeah. Which didn't help McFarland.
Then when the fans got a chance to see him, they're like, you know, because you're ripping off runs in the preseason. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, yeah, that guy's pretty good. Now we know what you're talking about.
But that's going to be a player to be named later. I mean, there's going to be somebody that we're not talking about, either that's on the team now or not, that's going to get a lot of run in the preseason.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know if Najee's even active.
A lot of times you're just running to try to get out of those games.
Well, yeah.
And you do want to take a look at your offensive line, but that's the other thing.
But he didn't run behind good lines.
You're going to be running behind good lines.
Right, with a good quarterback.
Right.
I mean, with a guy that knows how to get in and out of the huddle, and, you know, Boykins lined up out there, and Miller and guys like that, too.
NFL dudes.
Yeah, they're in a really good spot. If we play preseason DFS, grab the Steeler running back to be named later, whoever that is. Yeah.
Or you might want to grab Anthony McFarland.
Or McFarland, right.
Yeah. He's going to get some, you know, he probably gets 25 carries in the preseason.
Right. That could be for 150 yards.
Yeah.
In those circumstances against some backup defenses and stuff.
Absolutely. Matt, that's going to do it for the show.
Another one
today.
In the books.
Another one is
another
in the
beautiful
books.
Day in the Berg, too, by
Absolutely.
The way.
Absolutely. This weather has been unbelievable.
We got lucky on that. We have so far.
Yeah, we haven't frozen out here yet. Now that we're in June, I don't think
I don't think freezing's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't
right.
think that's going to happen to us, but that's
no
going
rain
to do
or,
it.
You know, right.
Yeah. For our OTA session number 7 is in the books. So for my birthday boy partner here, Matt Williamson, that's why we brought Tom Offerman on, just to give Matt a birthday present. He didn't have to do a full 2 hours with me. he could do some time with Tom Offerman for CJ here on site, keeping us on the air as well. I am Dale Lally. We want to thank you for listening to this special edition of The Drive here from the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex. We'll be back again tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat station. Talk to you then.